What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another special episode of the FanCast podcast. My name is Eric Davis. We are live from the 2013 Toronto International Film Festival. Of course, at my side for this whole thing has been Sean O'Connell. We're going to dedicate this specific podcast to one movie and one movie only, which we just saw called August Osage County. This is a big one. This is, I think, the last prestige potential Oscar contender that we saw at Toronto. And I think it has got Oscar written all over it. If you are one of those people who one of the things you want to know about a movie is it going to be nominated for an Oscar? This is going to be nominated for a bunch of them, including Best Picture. I cannot see it not getting that. Sean, tell us what the movie is about, because I'm awful at these on-the-spot plot synopsis, and what your immediate reaction is to it.
It's an adaptation of Tracy Letts' Pulitzer Prize-winning play, and so that alone lets you know that the Academy's paying attention to it. And then when you run down the cast list, it's essentially a family reunites in an Oklahoma home after the father of these three older grown daughters disappears for a little while. And they are concerned about their mother, and they're trying to figure out what happened with the dad. And the mother's played by Meryl Streep, and she, there's just so much going on. She has cancer. She's addicted to pills. The father is an alcoholic. All three of the daughters have their own problems. There's an extended family played by Chris Cooper and Margot Martindale, and their son, Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, the names just keep going on and on, and everybody brings baggage to this, to the house and to the trip. And it's just about how these people, these largely unlikable people, deal with each other and deal with their family issues. And Meryl Streep's character has reached the point where she's just, you know, she's dying. She's old. She's sick of dancing around everything. She's just going to be brutally honest. And the film, from what I understand, the play is even darker than the film, but the film has an honesty to it that just it's scintillating and searing in the way that these family members sort of tear and dig and punch. I tweeted right after, the film just feels like it jabs and it jabs and it jabs, and then it just works to it like a knockout punch. And it's such a hard movie to process in like the first 10 minutes after you leave it, but it's one of those films that's just going to sit with you for a long time, and you'll just be able to chew over the performances and the material and how raw and honest it tries to get.
Yeah, and I'm going to spew hyperbole. I'm sorry. This is one of the best dysfunctional family movies I've ever seen. It is just exceptional. The performances, I tweeted that Meryl Streep owns the movie, but Julia Roberts steals it. Because I really think it's the two of them, it's their show. I haven't seen Julia Roberts this good in a long time. I feel like she was really good in it. And Meryl Streep, what can you say? Meryl Streep is Meryl Streep. She plays the patriarch of the family, this mother who is suffering from mouth cancer, and she is just addicted to pills. And she is nasty, and she is angry, and she is filthy, and this is an angry family. You know, the apples do not fall far from the tree. There is a lot of anger in this family, and there's a lot of hatred. But as angry as they are towards each other, and there are some epic family fights in this film, it is also funny. It is very, very funny, and you will find yourself laughing out loud hysterically at some of these scenes because they're just crazy. And, you know, Sean and I were talking before we started recording, but one of the things about this film that I really loved is that you're going to see people in your family in this film, you know, and that's, I think, why we love these big ensemble dysfunctional family movies, is because we love them because we relate to them possibly more than any other movie that you relate to, just because everybody's got a family and everybody's got the crazy stories of their family and the secrets that they're hiding and that they have stashed places and they have bad memories and they have regrets. And you're going to see your own family in this movie, and it comes out at Christmas time, which is perfect. Because everybody's going to be with their families, or at least a lot of people are going to be with their families around Christmas, and it's a good movie to. Is it a good movie to see with your family? And that's my question to you, Sean.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought about like how they're going to sell this film. I think when you mentioned that it's one of the best dysfunctional family movies that you've ever seen, it's because the dysfunction doesn't define these characters. It's not we don't stay with them because they're wacky antics. They are saying things that we've maybe heard family members say, and they're saying things that we've maybe thought ourselves and didn't have the courage to say out loud. So, yeah, do you gather the family together, you know, after big Christmas dinner and say, let's all revel in someone else's misery? I don't know. It's going to be, I think it's going to be people who really appreciate the craft of acting because it is an acting feast. Everybody gets a chance to sign. The director is John Wells. He's known primarily for ER, the television show, which, as you know, juggled a large ensemble. And he made a film called The Company Men a year ago or 2 years ago at this point. And I thought he did a really nice job of balancing this large cast and giving everybody a chance to shine. It essentially boils down to Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts, but nobody gets shortchanged. Everybody gets a chance to develop their interesting characters and to put some time and effort and emotion into the relationships that they're trying to get across on screen. So I commend him for that because that's a near impossible job to get everybody in this cast a decent amount of time to clarify who they are so they don't just come across as a caricature, because I don't think anybody in this cast qualifies as being one note or thin. I think they all feel like they all had dimension. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they all had dimension. When we mentioned this cast, we're mentioning people like Ewan McGregor, who kind of hides in this movie. You don't really recognize him. He plays this straight-laced husband of Julia Roberts, and they're separated at the time, and there's a lot of dysfunction there. Their daughter is played by Abigail Breslin, who, of course, you know, and Benedict Cumberbatch, who feels like he's in every movie. He's in this film playing against what we usually see Benedict Cumberbatch playing. Dermot Mulroney has a very scene-stealing performance in this film. Chris Cooper has a great moment. Julia Lewis. I mean, this is, you know, it harkens back, and I don't want to say, I feel like I think of films like Parenthood, although Parenthood I felt was a little bit more well-rounded in terms of characters maybe redeeming themselves a little bit more, and but it's, I feel like, you know, Parenthood, I think Big Chill, I think those kinds of films. I read a book recently that I absolutely loved called This Is Where I Leave You, which is about a dysfunctional family reuniting to sit shiva for their father that just died, and all of the complicated memories that they bring up. And it reminded me a lot of this film. And if you haven't read the book, This Is Where I Leave You, I think they're going to adapt it into a movie as well. It is one of my favorite books that I've read in the last few years. I've been recommending it to everyone. But that's sort of the tone that I feel here, you know, that sort of reuniting. And then having to deal with all of this excess baggage that people have been carrying around for all these years. It's a good one. It's a Best Picture nominee. What do you think?
It is, for sure. Oh, it should be a nominee, for sure. But we have to talk about Streep. We have to talk about whether she has the chance of potentially winning a record-setting fourth Oscar win. And I hate to, you know, it just seems so lazy and cliche to be like, oh, Meryl Streep, she's so great. And then it annoys me that she won recently for, not even Devil Wears Prada, the one where she played the Queen, or where she played Margaret Thatcher. No, yes. The Iron Lady. It's so forgettable, I don't even remember the name of it. And they gave her the win for that year, and she shouldn't have won for that year because she's devastatingly good in this film. And she has a number of scenes that are written for her to just chew scenery. And Meryl Streep does not chew scenery. She makes a credible situation every single time, a believable performance. She's captivating in this movie. She's definitely going to get nominated. I'd put her on par with Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine this year in terms of, I know, that's how good I thought.
That is good. I'm just saying that's going to be an amazing battle between the two of them.
Yes, but and I don't know yet. I mean, I thought Streep was going to be in supporting. I think she's going to have to go to lead because she has a lot of screen time. She could be competing against Julia Roberts, who is also excellent in the film. So that Best Actress category could be Cate Blanchett, Julia Roberts, Meryl Streep, right off the bat before we've even seen what else is going to develop. And I think it's well-deserved. They all belong in that category, and then just let them fight it out because they're fantastic on screen.
Yeah, and it's because, like, I revert back to my other comments. It's Meryl Streep owns the movie, but it's not just Streep. She has a lot. She does get to chew a lot of scenery, but this is an ensemble cast, and a lot of people get their moments. And when Streep and Julia Roberts go head-to-head, I mean, It's some of the most powerful stuff I've seen from two actresses going head to head against each other in a movie in a while.
Yeah, I don't think that we've seen an Oscar contender that's really pit this type of star power and to really have it delivered. Now, of course, it's the screenplay. It's Tracy Letts adapting his own play. It's taking a three-hour play into a two-hour movie, and I know that some people are going to complain that there's some really, really dark elements in the play that didn't make it into the movie, and I understand that. I think that's a legitimate complaint, but I think that, you know, here you're criticizing a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright adapting his own play and telling him, oh, you could have done it better. Give me a break. He did what he wanted to do. He handed it over to a fantastic cast and a serviceable director. I don't want to say that John Wells did a fantastic job, but I think he really just knew to, hey, point my camera at this cast and let them go. And I'm interested to see how it's going to play. I wonder how it's going to do at the box office. I wonder if people will check it out once it starts getting nominations and what the word of mouth is going to be afterwards, because it is really tough to come out and say, with all of these films we've talked about at the Toronto International Film Festival, it's tough to come out and be like, you got to get a girl and go on a date and see 12 Years a Slave, or, hey, take your mom to August Osage County and hear Julia Roberts drop the F-bomb a lot. You know, they're hard sells to mainstream crowds, but they're movies that have to be seen.
Yeah, they are movies that have to be seen, and they're movies that you're going to be glad that you saw. But yeah, they are hard sells, you know. And you know, August Osage County, it is a play. And so it feels like a play when you watch it. And those are always kind of films that sit well with some people, but then also other people walk out and feel like they needed more. They felt like maybe it was too small. It felt too much like a play. Did you feel like it felt too much like a play? Do you feel like it needed to expand a bit?
At times it felt that way, and the dialogue did. The longer passages of dialogue where it seemed like people had a monologue written for them. It's not natural dialogue all the time. There's a lengthy dinner table sequence where everybody's sort of getting their chance to go back and forth, and the story's developing, but there isn't a lot of story. It all sort of takes place at this house. There's a little bit of setup getting here and there. But I think it would have felt awkward if they tried to expand it. And if you went away from the house and followed them on other places, that's not what this story was. So it doesn't, it doesn't. I think to its strength, it felt like an adaptation of a play.
Mr. Sean O'Connell, this was the last kind of big film that we saw here. And you know what? I know I hate talking about Oscar stuff this early, but it's hard not to after seeing the movies that we've seen here. And now that we've seen all of the big ones, because I think we have, we've seen all of them. Do you feel like there is a Best Picture winner here that has played here this week? And if so, which movie is it?
It's so early. I'd like to believe that Gravity could win Best Picture. If enough people embrace it and push it forward. We had this discussion earlier where I'm afraid Gravity is going to become the Social Network to something else's The King's Speech, whether it's Saving Mr. Banks or whether it becomes August Osage County or Inside Llewyn Davis or something else that the Academy latches onto. Coming out of TIFF, if there's a front runner, and it's way too early to say front runner, but if there's a movie that I think checks off all the boxes, it's Gravity, and right behind it would be August Osage County. They're like 1A and 1B for me.
Yeah, I'm going to completely agree with that. I mean, I saw 12 Years a Slave, and you walk out of that movie and you're like, oh, give it everything. I mean, it might be a little bit, I don't know. It may be a little bit too uncomfortable, a little too hard to swallow for Oscar voters. And I mean, when you talk about Oscars, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a pool of voters. So you have to say, who are these people? Statistically, what have they liked and what have they not liked? And I think 12 Years a Slave, it may be a little hard to swallow. There's a lot of really difficult material there. And yeah, I mean, I would say it's going to be Gravity in August Osage County as the early, early front runners coming out of Toronto. And if I were to pick, and if I would want Gravity to win it over that. But, you know, August Osage County was really good, too. And I could see that one being the most accessible, the one that everybody watches and sees a little bit of their own family in and sees a little bit of their own life in. And that may endear everybody to that film because that is the one that just you see and it will kind of bring everybody in.
And then watch, like, Ben Stiller's The Secret Life of Walter Mitty will hit. and it'll be this across-the-board crowd pleaser that's incredibly directed by him, and all these conversations will be moot. I mean, you know, projecting, maybe we see a split. Maybe they honor Cuarón for his directing, and they honor August Osage County for its large ensemble and great screenwriting, you know, because it's not, I wouldn't single out the direction for it, whereas with Gravity, it's primarily about the direction. So, you know, this could be one of those years, if we have 10 nominees, which they could go up to, where someone like Cuarón could rise to the top of the director's category, and I think that'd be well-deserved.
It's crazy that we're even talking about it this early, but folks, if you've seen the movies that we've seen in the last few days, you would be talking about it too, because one thing about Toronto International Film Festival is that this is the launching pad for the Oscars, and this is where the studios come with the ones that they, the big money ticket ones. I mean, we still have a few to go. We still have Wolf of Wall Street that's coming out. That's not screening anywhere. We still have Captain Phillips, which people are really, really liking. And we still have American Hustle, yes. From David O. Russell, who did Silver Linings Playbook. So there's still a lot that we haven't seen yet, and that will can come into play. But these films that we've mentioned have just been... Bennett Miller's Foxcatcher, too. I mean, there is going to be a lot this year. I felt like last year may have been, a bit small in terms of the films that were out there. But this year is going to be cutthroat, because there are some great, great movies that we've seen here, some great movies, hopefully great movies, that are on the way. Sean O'Connell. We still have more to talk about.
But this has been a pleasure so far. Like, the ability to celebrate these films right after we see them, to get Eric and I together in the same spot. We do this over the internet. It's nice to be able to just hash apart these films and really sit with them for a little bit and talk about them. We hope you guys have been enjoying our coverage from Toronto. We tried to really bring you up to date with everything that we've been seeing. It's impossible. There's 300 films up here. We're only two guys. As hard as we work, it's hard to get to everything. But we tried to touch on everything we thought you'd be interested in, and we'll keep covering the rest of the films as they make it to theaters, and you guys have a chance to buy tickets and see them for yourselves.
Stay tuned, everybody. We still have, I'd say, one, maybe two. Yeah, I'd say we have one, maybe two more podcasts from Toronto that we're going to shell out this week. So you'll stay tuned, and then we'll be back to the daily grind. And as Sean has said previously, and I have said, we are going to revisit these movies when they hit theaters and talk about them more at length and in greater detail. But we hope that you've enjoyed these podcasts, and that we hope that you're earmarking some movies that we're mentioning here, because I definitely think you need to, and put them on your watch list, because there's some great stuff here, and we've both seen some really spectacular movies. Thank you very much for listening. Please comment and tell us what you think, and drop a line, and if there's any questions you have, there's any movies still that we haven't talked about at Toronto you want to know about, then let us know, and we'll try to get you some feedback. On behalf of Mr. Sean O'Connell and myself, thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day.